Good morning. I call this meeting of the Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation Committee to order. Now would be an appropriate time to add any additional topics.
Does one add?
For the record,
Chief Paul Washer.
Legislators Rogowski, Pinto, Williams, Burrows. Let's go right into the agenda. We have two items for discussion today, in addition to some referral items. But in looking at our agenda, we're going to start off with the County Executive's proposed expense reduction plan for the Department of Transportation. We have with us Commissioner Larry Salley. And Commissioner, why don't you come up and join us? And wherever it's comfortable. We got plenty of room.
Plenty of room.
Wherever it's comfortable, sure.
Yeah, get next to Alfredo there. That's way more intimate. Yeah. All
right. Okay. The I wonder if to begin we could ask you to summarize at this point the expense reduction plan that's been put forward by the County Executive for the Department of Transportation.
Sure. Good. To go back in time, when we submitted, we being the department, submitted our budget, it was $98,145,000. The then administration reduced that by approximately $1.8 million.
Okay. Say that again, Larry. I'm sorry.
Approximately $1.8 million. Okay. And then when the budget was actually adopted by the Board of Legislators, the board reduced that by an additional $1,750,000. 1.5 of that being service cuts, and $250,000 being anticipated additional revenue from the cash coin fair. That totaled 1.7. So that's a total of $3,639,252. So we started off the year that amount of money less than what we had submitted as what was necessary to run the system. Then when the governor released his executive budget, the amount of state operating assistance was reduced by another $3.6 million. Now, obviously, that has not been finalized yet, but that's the figure that we've been told by the state DOT that we should be looking at, and it could possibly get worse.
Just, Mr. Chairman, may I just on that, how much is our STOA last year that we're being reduced? And I remember previously we got little STOA from them until we finally had some action taken to raise our STOA. Now we're,
right.
It would be helpful to know what we're being reduced from.
Did you say STOA?
State
Transportation Operating Assistance, STOA.
Okay. The amount was 47 million. That's correct. And it's now down to 44 million in the proposed budget.
Right.
Okay. So the steps that have been taken to date, we, as part of the 2010 budget, we eliminated the AirLink, which was the service out to the airport. We also eliminated the Route 12 north of Armonk, which runs up to Jefferson Village, Jefferson Valley. The ridership on those two routes were really abysmal. So in both instances, there were alternatives. The Route 12 will get you to the airport. It obviously doesn't run as frequently as the AirLink did. The Route 12, you can get to Arma, but you do have to come into White Plains first and then transit. But we were talking on that leg of the route, roughly 38 passengers a day. So those are the steps that have been taken to date, which still leaves us with a $2,063,000 gap. That's not taking into account the governor's proposed reduction.
Oh, it doesn't take that
into account? No, it does not.
So those have taken place?
By me?
Those two changes have already happened? Or
yes,
started?
That's correct. They went into effect on February 15th. Now, for the remainder of the year, we have proposed some service modifications and reductions that would generate, beginning June 28th, an additional $2,063,483 in savings. And they include the following. We would not operate the Route 6 Sunday service between White Plains Bus Terminal and Valhalla. We do that on a seasonal basis.
Larry, before you're reading from something, rather than us write notes, can we get a copy of
that? Yeah.
This way we can follow you along and be more convenient for everybody.
Okay.
Thank you. I apologize.
Sure, no problem. Thank you. No problem.
Makes it simpler. I can't read my own writing, so I can make it ridiculous.
Larry, the 38 passengers a day on the, with respect to the actions taken thus far since February, mid-February, the 38 passengers a day, that included AirLink?
No.
Did?
No. That was just the Route 12,
just Route 12
north of Armonk. Mm-hmm. That makes stops in Mount Kisco and then Jeff Valley.
Chairman, can I ask about the airline?
Go ahead.
I mean, the past, you know, I was never a huge fan of it. I wasn't sure how many people, in fact, would take it. But can you tell us again, was it useful, but you had to cut it out? Or from a business point of view, you just wouldn't do it anyway?
What happened was we instituted that when we were having very severe parking problems at the airport. Mm-hmm. And before we proposed any additional parking at the airport, we wanted to explore all options. You know, people say, well, have you tried running bus service? It was less than moderately successful. We, in fact, towards the end of the route, had reduced the headway time from running every half hour to running every hour. And I can get you the exact figures, I just don't remember them offhand. But probably each hour run was carrying two passengers per hour. The real, quote, heavy loads were in the morning, and what we found was that those were a number of employees who lived in the Kensico Avenue, Lake Street area who were taking it out to work.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, my question, you know, from a pure business point of view, doesn't make sense, but it doesn't really add to anything else, but presumably the airport revenue fund paying for that service, it wouldn't necessarily, you know, reflect on your budget. I mean, how does that work?
It was paying for a portion.
Just a portion of it.
Right.
Well, why wouldn't they pay for the whole thing?
Because part of it, in fact, I'll get you back the exact figures on what portion was being paid.
I mean, not to waste airport money, but if the airport, in fact, was paying for it and the airport had the funds, if it was a service that was, you know, needed by some folks, maybe the airport could say it. But based on the numbers, it's probably just not as about who's paying for it.
Exactly.
Okay, so we have this spreadsheet in front of us. So why don't we return? We're talking about the actions that are scheduled for June
28th, that's correct.
June 28th, okay.
The six was a service that we instituted. It basically ran during the summertime when we had the cultural affairs at the Kensico Dam. Mm-hmm. And that is being eliminated, and you see the savings there.
That is a six-month savings.
That's
when we say annualized, that would be the 6 months.
That's right. You really didn't even run it for six months.
Okay.
But that would be the savings over the remaining 6 months of the year.
So this was only a summer
That's time. Correct. Mm-hmm. Only when the cultural events were being held at the dam. Okay, the next one is on the Route 7. We're reducing the midday service to a 30-minute headway from presently it's 20. And you see the savings there.
Through the chair, does that mean that it comes every 20 minutes?
It presently comes every 20 minutes now. It will now be every 30 minutes.
Oh. I read it's a 30-inch headway. Oh,
yeah.
That's a short bus.
We do have, we got 30-foot. We don't have 30-inch bus. On the number 14, we are discontinuing the service from White Plains to Bloomingdale Road. As you can see, those are the number of passengers being carried every day. Mm-hmm. So certainly in light of the passenger load, we are recommending that that service be discontinued. On the 42, you see where we are modifying our service in New York City. And those are the alternatives. In each case, we've listed the alternatives that are available to passengers.
Mr. Chairman, so on this particular one, so this is this bus line 42 runs on White Plains Road. Mm-hmm. So basically, that. So what happens is people will just get off at 241st and they just have to take the train or transfer to the buses.
That's correct.
So they can still.
Okay. And where's the 42 run?
Okay. The 42 runs from there all the way up to through Mount Vernon, Eastchester, White Plains. There's a post road.
Coincidental with the 40.
So exactly. It just stops it. So it's going to stop at 241st instead of going down to 230.
That's correct. This has really no. Well, it does have an effect on what that's written when they're traveling into the city. They will have to make either transfer.
So
someone who typically used to get off at 233rd will now be getting off at 241st.
And the core, I mean, so instead of 233rd, which is the main line, like the 233rd, which county buses would come? You know, is that 233rd is how someone would go across 233rd Street to get over towards the Sound Shore side? Is that how that would happen? I'm trying to think what the difference is. Or 241st Street is there a bus that runs? Is that a bus that runs across 241st Street across?
There are New York City buses that do none of that.
Baychester? Do you know that runs across Baychester? I don't even think there's one that runs across Baychester. Right? I think that the service.
Diary Avenue subway line number 5.
Right. I don't believe that there's a bus that runs across 241st Street that goes across Baychester, which. Mr. Chair, I apologize for it. I think the 241st Street is the termination of the number 2. Line, right?
It's the number 2 and the number 4.
And the number 4 sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Right. But mostly the 2, right? But I don't think there's a bus that goes across from 241st Street across Baychester Avenue that would get to 233rd Street where that the other angle is. So I think there might be, if there's additional research for this particular. On Baychester, I mean, I don't think there's a bus that goes straight across Baychester. I'm just not sure. Right? And that would make a difference because there's the buses that come from Westchester that end up like on.
Get the map if you want to refer to it.
I don't.
because I'm not. I'm trying to follow.
Yes. Oh wait, wait. There's a Bronx person. Yeah.
I'm
not quite.
I still go to the corner of Baychester and Toothwood First, and there is no bus that runs from Baychester where Baychester and 233rd intersect. Mm-hmm. There's no bus, and the 4 train doesn't end at 241st. Only the 2 train, not but, even the 5 train.
Right, the 5. That's right. It's the 2 and the 5. That's
no,
right.
Just the 2.
Okay, there's a service every once in a while that they do that, but that's the issue here that I think that there's nothing that goes across, you know, from. Oh look.
Why Hegel's a map, Ken?
Ken, you got a map right behind the bottom end of your pile. Open that, up the map, you'll see the subway lines and the bus lines right. And all the different streets on it. Then you can update.
But it goes
us.
Into New York.
Yes.
City?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. It'll show you the subway lines.
Thank you. Because what happens is, I think that's one of the issues, is that it just doesn't come across on 241st Street. Okay, so we're at the bottom of the map, mm-hmm. at the number 2. Well, this is a Westchester bus, so I can't.
You'll see the 40.
East, okay, there's
you
the
see
5.
The 40, you see the 42.
Right.
You see the 41, which is the express, is that right?
Yeah, the red circle yeah. 2, that's the train number 2, right?
Yes.
Right. So
and the red and the green circle 5.
I don't, it's not shown on this map, but I don't believe that there's a bus that goes across at 241st Street in Baychester, which is what Tina Lamengo has suggested, and that the only way to get across is by going down to 233rd Street, and that's how you get to that place of Baychester and 2.
But then they would have to take the subway up to Wakefield and then take the bus.
The bus that would go across from 233rd Street is the kind of bus that would get you over towards Co-op City and all that other kind of stuff.
But
the
idea here is to get you south, not to get you east.
I understand. I'm just saying that the reason that I'm not sure what the impact is of stopping at 241st Street as opposed to 233rd Street, because you're saying that the person can get on the New York City bus or the number 2 train,
right.
But that's a triple jump, if you will, right? So they have to get off the bus, they have to get off of the county bus, get on the train or a bus to go to 233rd Street to get on whatever next piece it is. So I'm not sure if it's an issue or not. I'm just throwing it out there, right? So.
But that's, with all due respect, Mr. Chairman, that would be traveling within the Bronx. And I think what we're looking at is getting people from Westchester downtown city, and they've got the 241st, they have the Dyer Avenue, they have the other ones over, off of the Major Deegan that you take down by Yankee Stadium.
They don't have to get on a 41 bus in New York City to get onto the number 2 train.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying to that. I apologize for not being clear on it. The issue is how many people take our bus to 233rd Street. So how many people, is it 200 passengers that would go from 241st to 233rd? Is there a way of being able to track that and say, okay, there's 200 people that take this bus, or is it 200 people that get off? 200 passengers that get off at 233rd Street.
That's correct.
So it's 200 people that get off at 233rd Street.
Right.
I'm saying the question that I'm raising is mm-hmm. that those 200 passengers that get off at 233rd Street, do they just get on the train? But I suspect that if they're going to 233rd Street under the same...
But they're not going just to 233rd Street. They're going south of that.
They may be going east or west of that. That's the question. I don't know. That's what. It's a detailed question.
Yeah,
right?
I understand. What
okay.
You're
right. If the reason I'm suggesting that is that the train line for all of us that understand the number 2 starts at 241st Street.
Yes.
Why would you get off at 233rd Street? If you could get off at 241st Street and get on the train at the very first stop and get a seat and all this other kind of stuff. Why would you get off at 233rd? There must be a reason you're getting off at 233rd Street, and it's probably to go east and west because there's not a way to do it from 241st Street. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we can find that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's continue on the loopy
Okay, Loop E is another lightly used shuttle, and there are alternatives. They can utilize Route 3 or the 12 bus, which travels the same route. We will actually take those buses into places like MasterCard and Manhattanville. So there really is a duplicative service. And as you can see, we save a significant amount of money by discontinuing that Loop E shuttle.
Sorry.
Here
we go.
Oh,
Tom, sorry.
On that one, I mean, over the years, this loop run, as expensive as it is, and you know, it's obviously expensive, has been promoted as you know, part of our economic development activities. We're working with those corporations out there. Are they being advised? I assume that this is going to be cut. Are they being advised? What's their reaction?
Nobody likes
it. Nobody likes it, but the fact is that we've asked them to contribute above and beyond to support this very expensive service. They said, sorry, but we gave it the office when we pay our taxes. Right. So we have to make adjustments the same as they do in their business. It's a very expensive service, serving a handful of people for which there is an alternative. Will somebody now have to walk 500 feet to their office as opposed to getting off right in front of it? In some cases, yes. But the fact of the matter is that you still have transit service to your facility.
Well, then, you know, without going too far back in time, I guess, I mean, these alternatives were there. It's just this was something extra that the county was providing over the years as part of, you know, attracting businesses there. Was this something
exactly? Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when we were in better financial shape, it was easy to provide the kind of service that we did.
I gather these companies aren't interested in, or would some might be interested in subsidy. If they want their employees not to have to walk the 500 feet, would they be willing to contribute?
We've approached them, and universally they have said no. Either they will run their own shuttle, or they will not participate in it.
No, I mean, listen, the savings obviously important. This new administration, well, the old administration too, but certainly the new administration, has come in very loudly speaking about, you know, economic development is number one. This is all, you know, this is all we're doing. Not as if, you know, sort of ignoring that. I think there was a lot done in the last administration. But fine, their message is economic development, working with businesses. But then they're, you know, first thing I see coming out of the gate is cutting this loop that was imposed to assist these businesses. So it just seems a little in conflict.
You know, as I said earlier, it was imposed when we're in much better financial shape than we are now. I said, already we're seeing a $3.6 million reduction in aid, and we don't know what's looming out there after the governor's budget.
But there's no doubt. I guess
and the fact of the matter is that there are alternatives.
Yeah. No, and you're right. At the end of the day, you know, the larger question would be if and when we get that final STOA cut, you know, how we deal with that in terms of, you know, backfilling or saying, you know what, this is what was cut, and we just have to make priority decisions. We have less money. We're not going to backfill. We have to look around. But I'm saying, you know, the message out of the administration, if they choose to cut this, you know, I'd be curious if they go to the next Westchester County Association meeting and say, you know, this is our priority. We're going to cut this, because they seem to talk, you know, one thing, but then actions speak louder than words. This is the act. That's fine. This may be the reaction, but everyone needs to understand that that's the decision they're making. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, again, so, and I did hear Mr. Chairman say that in the past, the businesses have been reluctant to provide a level of support, additional support for this. Did we reach out in this round to suggest to them that this particular service was going to be cut and sent it to the affected businesses, as Legislator Rogowski has just pointed out, to say to them, are you interested in doing this?
There were discussions that were held with several of the businesses along this
road. No, did we send a communication to them? That we sent written communication to them and asked them for a response, or did we just have a conversation through anecdotal conversations?
We had conversations.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I mean, what I would request in supporting Mr. Rogowski's point in that on this particular route as it serves a specific clientele that we request to those businesses that are impacted in that loop area, that we write to them and suggest to them would they be interested in a contribution, or conversely, could would the passengers be interested in an increase, a dollar increase in fare?
No, can do.
Why is that?
We don't control the fare.
The MTA, this is done by the MTA now?
Once you become part of MetroCard, the fares are set.
This is just this loop or all of it?
All the entire system.
Because that's one thing I've heard from when you get to the M4C, the right. One that's affecting the most, over 1,600 passengers. A lot of those people, believe it or not, said, I guess at one time it used to be a $7 charge.
That's correct.
And they reduced it to $5. They said they'd be willing to go back up to the $7.
No can do. Well, once we went to MetroCard, the fare system is set throughout.
There's a lot of money there.
I didn't realize that.
Mr. Arbenacher? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On this point, we can't do it as long as this is part of the Metro North system. MetroCard system.
MetroCard.
Can we spin this off and let Liberty Lines just run it separately and charge whatever it wants? Almost in the nature of a private run.
You're talking loopy.
Yeah, all of these ones that they want to eliminate, because all the ones that you're talking about eliminating seem to be separate and apart from the grid of buses that we run. These seem to be the specialty ones. So can we just say, I don't know if Liberty Lines would be interested, but could we just
unless
say...
Unless they're going to receive the same subsidy from us? I can tell you absolutely not. Because in order to make this work, the 4C, for example, you would have to increase the fare to $15. Because presently, the fare box only covers 30% of the cost. You'd have to increase the fare to $15, and you'd have to increase the ridership from 489,000 passengers to 1.1 million passengers, just to break even.
And that's on which, on all of the loops that you're talking about cutting?
Not 4C.
Oh, I can give you the individual
one. X4C.
4C is the major one. It is.
Because that's the one I think I'm hearing at least the most complaints about.
Well, we can come back.
Could we still work out something to give them a subsidy? Then it wouldn't have to go to $15, right, if you continue the subsidy. If we continue some kind of a subsidy...
Why would we treat this any differently than we're going to treat the rest of the system? Where you have the majority of the people who are earning less than $35,000 a year.
Yes.
The majority of the people on the 4C, the vast majority, earn over $55,000 a year, and there's 25% that earn over $100,000. How do you justify that from... an equal rights standpoint.
Well, what I'm saying is that's how I justify charging more. To keep it going, you give it a subsidy, and we can negotiate what the subsidy has to be. Perhaps you cut it back to rush hour, and then since these people are people who are making more money, let them pay double the fare that everybody else is paying.
It's
at least that way you save the service, and we're giving the same subsidy that we give to everybody else. But they're keeping the subsidy by doubling their fare.
I think this is a worthwhile conversation. What I want to do is I want to continue on through on a description of these different routes that constitute the savings plan.
Okay, on the loop T, we're talking about discontinuing that route. The only business that would be affected by that is Siemens on Benedict Avenue. And what we're doing is we're modifying the F to drop people off at that site.
So,
Mr. Chair.
That's what,
Tarrytown? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, right where Benedict Avenue, you go to the road, it used to be the old Bayer.
Before
you get there. The only stop on there is Siemens, and we will now service that with the Route 13 or the Loop F.
All right. Mr. Pinto.
Just want to, with the passengers affected, is it 80 total or 80 each way or round trip on the loops?
That's total. Passengers.
Total for the
day. Half that for the number of people.
Daily passengers.
Daily passengers.
Mr. Rogowski.
The Loop F, because obviously we're getting rid of Loop T and Loop E, what's the cost of Loop F? Is that, are we making money on that, or is, there, or is that... Is
we
that,
don't make money on any of it.
Okay. Well, what's the... so, obviously, a decision, you know, decision was made to... I don't know how many... maybe loop... how many passes loop F carry? Why was F kept and T and E dropped?
Because the ridership figures were much less.
And on T and E, that's my point. So, F has a larger base.
That's correct.
More people. You know, we're seeing... You know, this is very helpful. What we're seeing, Mr. Chairman, is the decisions helps, the decisions that were made to cut, the decision of balancing, well, you know, cut that but keep this, like the decision to keep F, we, you know, we don't have those in front of us, but so we just, you know, take these. So F was sufficiently utilized, even though it's there's a loss there, the decision was made not to cut that.
Okay. Let me just ask a question. The one of the in transit alternatives for loop T, there's a reliance to some degree on loop F, but below loop T, loops B, D, and F are to be
one trip from each
loop. Okay, so we're able to do that, but at the same time extend to the extent that we rely on loop F, we're able to extend that in a way where it picks up additional service requirements.
Correct.
Okay. Well. Mr. Chairman, that point, I was just saying, B, D, and F totals 25 passengers, but that's not, that one trip takes 25, you know, has 25 total, right? That's the savings, but out of there, 10 trips a day, 20 trips a day.
Well, one
I'm just saying, maybe we should cancel loop F and keep loop T. I mean, I don't know what, you know, how you, but you're saying...
Well, the commissioner's done this. He's based right, it on statistics, so. And I mean,
it's sufficiently more ridership. Okay.
All right. And the fact that, again, there are alternatives on those other routes.
Okay.
They're very viable alternatives.
Okay.
92. Yeah. There's some seasonal service that we run on the 92 when Payland is in operation. And we have discussed this with Joe's operational people at Payland. And what we plan on doing is eliminating that 92, and passengers have the option of utilizing Route 13 to Port Chester and then transfer it to the 76 bus.
What's the 20-50-50 mean?
What is it?
Those are the ridership figures. The 20 is weekday, the 50 is Saturday, and the 50 is Sunday.
So why wouldn't we just recommend just getting rid of the 20 as opposed to the ones on the weekend? I mean, it's not maximum savings, but I mean, the one with 20 seems to me, Mr. Chairman, to you that
you have to put another driver out for Saturday and Sunday, and that's where the cost comes.
Well, the other thing is the county. I'm sorry, Julian.
You can eliminate a driver by doing it.
Yeah, but has the county also implemented or taken it the next step that I don't know how many of these 50 on a Saturday and Sunday go to the park, and therefore we'd be losing revenue over right. at the Playland. Have you carried those figures on an estimate or approximation?
Well, we may not be losing them. They can go to Route 13.
There are alternatives.
Well, convenience does mean something, but the question again, Mr. Chairman, through you, is that with Liberty Lines, you're suggesting that by doing this 20-50-50, that we're eliminating a driver,
that's
right?
Correct.
And the thing that we're throwing out, or at least the suggestion that unless I'm making, is that all right, if we're eliminating or the proposal for some places that we're going to eliminate weekend service for certain places, which is going to be a recommendation on the next one, is that to eliminate the weekend service, Liberty Lines could figure that out. You know, if the bus driver has to move around, is that, I mean, if they had a half a body to move around, that's not our issue, is it?
Yeah, we're paying for it.
No, if they have one person and we eliminated, for example, let's say we recommend on the 4C that we eliminate weekend service, right? Those same drivers, or they'll have a pool of drivers available to run this route, right?
No, if you wind up...
I mean, It's just, I mean, that's the suggestion, Mr. Chairman, because what happens is we don't need to get records. Exactly.
How they allocate drivers.
Right. How
they save money. So if we're talking about agreeing with you on some of these and disagreeing on others, so then we're saving some money. We're just concerned about also providing some services where there's the largest number of people who need them. And how the Liberty Lines rearranges its drivers, that's their problem. There are going to be some layoffs no matter what you do here. They're going to have to lay off some drivers. We might be able to minimize the number of layoffs and the impact on our economy if we do this carefully.
On this, if we anticipate the $3 million or so, cut 3.6 from the governor.
I'm anticipating that it's going to be more.
That's what I was going to ask. So then we have to make up more. So even by trying to.
I mean, if you just look at what's going on in the state right now, the projections that come out every day, you know, the governor's budget came out. Many months ago, and it was $3.6 million then.
It's only getting worse.
It's only going to get worse. And anybody that thinks that it's not.
And I have to go back to, you know, it's important that we understand our delegates' role, because when I did the things before, we were getting only, I believe, $25 million in STOA, and we went crazy to get our delegation to fight, whilst Nassau and Suffolk were getting $96 million STOA for the same type of system that we run. And to get up to what we are, and then to get down three, maybe even more, I don't know what their anticipated cuts are down there. But this is something that we have to take into account and what we can do.
Well, for a three-year period through 2008, we were on par with Nassau. We were receiving about $44 million a year in STOA, which was virtually the same amount that Nassau was using.
Was it? I thought they got a lot more.
They did prior to that.
Okay.
For a three-year period, we did maintain parity. However, since then, they are now receiving $10 million more in state
operations. So we will lose more aid anticipated. This helps us cut the gap of $3.6 million loss.
Correct.
We have to be conscious of that. Okay.
Well, this, yeah.
At least partners.
Yes. Going back to Route 92. The bus that runs between Playland and Port Chester, the Route 76 bus, is a short bus, I'm told.
Well, it loops, yeah.
But it's a little bus.
Yeah, it's a 30-footer, as opposed to 40-footer.
I've been told anecdotally that there are more passengers than there are spaces for them. At least from the company that runs the bus there. My concern is if it's already too small of a bus for that route, possibly, is it going to be able to accommodate these additional 50 people on weekends? I mean, if they're all going and they're all going to transfer in Port Chester and then all going to try to squeeze onto this stuff, is there an opportunity to make that a bigger bus?
Well, I think...
So 30 to 40?
I think what happened was... We have gone from, he had shuttle vans.
Right.
He now has a 30-foot bus.
Okay, so what I was hearing was the shuttle. When did he get larger?
Probably last week or within the last week.
Oh, okay, because I spoke with him a month ago.
Yeah, they started.
So he now has larger buses.
That's correct.
Okay.
We have virtually discontinued all of the shuttle vans.
Okay.
And replace them with 30-foot vehicles.
Okay.
Because it gives you a lot more flexibility. The 30-foot, the shuttle vans you could only use on those routes. This way you can use the bus anywhere in the system.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you.
Just on that bus, Bill, if I might. Judy, which way does that bus go when it comes down from the train station up Regents to Westchester? Does it go down Milton before it gets to Playland, or does it go down Midland before it gets to Playland? I mean, only because it's time and...
I don't know.
People go into work and stuff. Okay.
But it seems to meet the need. It was the need seemed to be that they just needed more space when he was running only shuttles.
And they got more space.
And they have the more space. I don't think, the timing wasn't an issue. Other than not being able to sit on the bus.
Following up Mr. Pinto's point, that Commissioner Sally makes a very interesting point. I mean, we're going here, all of us have different concerns, different routes. So we're taking the time to do it. But at the end of the day, certainly, if this $3.5 million which is not factored, right? You haven't even factored in that,
correct?
The 3.5. So we have probably a minimum of 3.5, not more. to where I was going before in terms of priorities, we may be way beyond these. We may be so we could, you know, we can take the time now, but it's like
there's more coming.
This stuff. So we have 3.5 million on top of this, and then maybe more. And that's where we find this is like already, you know, you can say already out the door. It's like
this is covering this known in place gap, right?
In place gap, but there's at least 3.5 presumably. Our delegation, if they're notwithstanding, they haven't come through in the past, at least 3.5, and it could be 5.5. So this is
Keep your scissors out. Change where
we're headed.
Mr. Chairman, two points. On the point with the store money, you know that in our state legislative package, what we asked for, Mr. Chairman, is an exemption basically from cuts until we our store ad equals whatever levels of Nassau County. So what we asked for was not extra money because we knew that wasn't going to happen, right? But what we did ask our state legislation, our state delegation to do is to exclude us in the STOA cuts. And certainly Senator Stuart Cousins, who was the chair of local government, was in Albany when the change went back. So previous to her being elected from our body here, the aid got up to the $44 million, well, got up to the equal number. And then, surprisingly, when Senator Stuart Cousins became the senator and she was in the minority at that time, the aid went back. So, you know, these things occur. However, what we did ask them for, and our state delegation has committed to in fighting for us in the store aid, that at least we would be held harmless, if you will, until such time as our aid equals Nassau County's, and I think something or whatever Nassau is just the one, right? Is the one until we get equal, and then they would go down from there. So there is still a potential that this 3.6 million isn't 3.6 million. And the other question, which I will wait, I'll wait for the bigger money question until we get to the end, Mr. Chairman. But I would like to definitely see an opportunity where we just cut the weekday service and let the bus company, let Liberty Lines figure out what they have to do for this particular thing, and then we can at least have a study on whatever the impact might be.
The seasonal service coming out of White Plains, that where does that originate? At the Trans Center?
Yes.
Okay. And the stop prior to Port Chester or the main stop prior to Port Chester of Route 13 is what, coming out of White Plains?
In the same place.
Are there any other questions on 92?
It starts, is that 13 up there? 13 starts in Austin, comes down to Tarrytown, then goes to Fort Chester, and picks up at the Modality Center in White Plains.
Most of the people who are taking it out from Fort Chester would be getting on White Plains.
White Plains, okay.
The legislative act is correct.
Right. So for them, rather than a White Plains to Rye, it's White Plains to Port Chester to 76 plus 11. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I just got an email from my supervisor. When you allow calls in from the outside, you know, he notes that discontinuing of the buses, I guess the one to Manhattan, maybe all of them, reduces alternatives in the event of a terrorist attack. I just want to put that on the record for my supervisor.
Really?
Wow.
He also eliminated the security in Town Hall because a terrorist attack was not imminent in his view. So you can't have it both ways.
I just thought I should put it on the record.
So is he suggesting that
we keep the buses?
The buses are operating in a way that benefits people?
I think so, yeah.
This wouldn't be the supervisor who advocates the elimination of county.
Yes.
So noted.
That's why I thought I would note it on the record.
So noted. Thank you, Mr. Feiner. Let's move on then to the main event. We've got, let's talk about the New York City.
First, should we make sure that the commissioner is wearing the appropriate headgear and chest protective foot? Okay.
Let me just
guys
say,
are light stuff compared to
when
I was down at the Will Library 4 years ago when we proposed.
Well, guess what? The Will Library is having another meeting in another week.
And right.
2 weeks, and we're going to ask you to make your appearance.
We're having our public hearing on April 14th, and we'll be glad if hear all comments.
Is that at the Will Library? Because
no,
that's
at the
okay, because April, I think that's the same day. Is that coincidence?
No, no, no. This is, I think, April 6th or something like that.
Many constituents have been...
I wish we had that many people riding the bus.
Contact, yes, yeah.
Is there any way you could appear? I mean, you're saying you don't want them.
No.
I don't know.
It's kind of productive. I mean, I'm not going to get into a debate with folks. The purpose of the public hearing is to gather their comments,
right,
take them back, do a deliberative analysis of them, and respond. I mean, you know, it gets into a shouting match.
All right.
Mr. Chairman,
it's just not.
A few things on the M4C, I'm certain. I'm not sure if we are going to just accept. I apologize, my phone's going crazy. Comments that we have received so far through email, are you accepting those as well? As
yeah, public absolutely.
Because right, what happens, I mean, I can't even tell you how many emails that
you
we have
forward
gotten.
Them all,
right?
Larry.
Oh, no, I'm gonna package them up and send them through the chairman, and so that we can have our package together, as well as the number of phone calls that we have received about this particular thing.
I'm getting petitions.
The petitions, people phone call.
Well,
I mean,
I'm getting them
too, and rather than pack 1,000 emails, somewhere along the line, we're going to have to see which ones are duplicative or triplicative or to all 17 of us.
Let's talk about this. Let's get a brief overview.
Sure.
About the map. Describe this route and let's
right.
talk about it.
And we need to go back in time to understand the origin of this route.
Yes.
The route was instituted in 1981-82 when the railroad was still being operated by Conrail. Okay. The service was absolutely horrendous on the railroad. So then County Executive O'Rourke and members of this board said we need to look at some alternative means of transit for our residents into the city. And they did. They came up with the BXM4C. And it probably reached its peak in about 1995 when the ridership was about 800,000 passengers per year. Over the years, the service on now Metro North improved dramatically. I mean, they're probably at a 97% on-time rate on the Harlem division. And the ridership on this route has declined dramatically. It went from 800,000 in 95 down to 400,000 in 2006. We saw a brief bump up in 2007 when we implemented the MetroCard, when we bought into the MetroCard, and the fare went down from $7 to $5 because that was the express fare that MetroCard charged. And it's probably held constant at around 480,000 passengers a year since then. In 2007...
Isn't that considered a lot of passenger or riders?
No, and I'll tell you why. When you look in the industry, the standard measure is passengers per mile carried. So when you look at system-wide, we carry 2.86 passengers per mile. On this particular route, we're down to 0.56 passengers per mile.
What is it again?
0.56.
Wow.
Because you have to take into account...
But it's a long trip. That's one of the reasons.
But you're only picking up people here.
Right. That's why you're reducing the passenger per mile.
But that's the measure.
The denominator is very large.
You're not picking up passengers. You're picking up passengers, most of which are in...
from Way Plains or
Midland Avenue. The majority of passengers board...
South of Ashford Avenue.
Yeah,
most of the
majority of passengers board at McLean Avenue.
Yep.
Ardsley Road is a complete misnomer. You only have at Ardsley Road 24 passengers boarding.
Can you give the stops, say, from McLean on north?
Especially with their east-west lateral.
You don't save anything by cutting out the window entries.
Let me see. Go start on McLean and then just go north.
McLean is 140-41. That's the heaviest. Clark is 51, Yonkers Avenue 62, Miles Square 69, Midland 49, Palmer 22, Arlington 36.
Give us a copy of this.
I can give you a copy of it.
Hold on, let him finish. Arlington was 36.
Arlington 36, Tuckahoe Road 71, Sator Lane 79, Melrose 67, Roxbury 87. Fort Hill 24, Jeffrey Park 24, Fountain 19, Ardsley 24, Underhill 17, Marion 21, Parsdale 24, Dalewood 19, Crosby 18, and Harding 34.
Can I interrupt for a second? Okay. Can you compare these numbers with other bus stops and people getting on other buses throughout the county? You're using passenger miles, and I understand passengers per mile. Right. I understand that's the standard way of doing this. But how do these numbers of people getting on compare to the numbers of people getting on buses elsewhere in the county?
Well, I can tell you, for example, on the...
I mean, what did you have, 100 and how many people in one spot?
On the 20, which services the same corridor, we have 3,838,000, and we can give you the breakdown by stop. And I can assure you that at most of these stops, they far exceed 141. But we can give you the breakdown by stop.
Can we see those comparisons?
Yeah, sure.
What would be helpful to me individually? We went through the cross routes, main intersections, people getting on. If one knows Gordon's district, Sator Lane and Tuckahoe Road are basically block and a half away besides the Roosevelt High School field area, not too bad. What is the downtime from, is it 241st Street, Jerome Avenue line? The bus goes on to Major Deegan.
Right.
Once it gets down past McLean. Picks up the Major Deegan south of the railroad, south of the raceway, and then it goes on the Major Deegan down to the city.
Yeah.
If these people didn't have a ride all the way to the city, the bus goes down full, comes back empty.
Correct.
No picking up.
Correct.
No utilization route until it gets back to Westchester.
Correct.
Goes down empty, and then picks up at the evening.
Correct.
And takes people back.
Correct.
So if there was a juggernaut where we had a better service to the different train stations, we had to look at the ridership and saying, what's their Metro North round trip monthly pass from the Harlem River or the Hudson River Valley lines versus the Metro North connection at 241st Street, Jerome Avenue, and be able to take the trip down? Is there adequate subway station?
See, the issue is not, and Vito's getting... The issue is not just the railroad. The railroad is not the only alternative, particularly for people.
I know that. But that's why I didn't mean to interrupt you. But
when
we come down, if people take the bus and don't go on the Deegan South, and they have to get off at, let's say, the Jerome Avenue line where the cemetery in Woodlawn is, I can't remember the numbers that start there.
Four
starts there. Are there adequate trains starting to handle these numbers of people who would get off, which they did way back during peak periods? I need to know, be fair to people, that is the cost exponential with the ridership and service provided from a subway or from the train stations? And is it something that is not only an extra burden and changing, as I get a few? I don't get a lot because I represent Tuckahoe, Bronxville, and some people know from the hearings we've been at the library, Will Library, in the past, that they say, well, I can't get to the Bronxville train station, I can't get to the Tuckahoe train station in adequate time. And I said, yeah, I don't know why. You know, the number 8 coming along Tuckahoe Road, people from Sator Lane can go to Tuckahoe Road and pick that up in front of Carlos and then come across. The same thing goes with the Palmer Road bus that comes across.
they're saying it's not adequate to meet their needs compared to the time they get on the bus and go south, and then once they pick up the Deegan. I need to look at the total picture of my, and I'm sure you guys have to look at it even more so. Most of the riders come from your area, not mine. Mr. Dirk, did I make sense?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a few additional pieces of detail. I mean, one of the things is that most of the concerns and the complaints that people have expressed isn't that there's not a way to get there. They're saying at least it's averaging for some of these individuals an hour of additional travel time to do all those pieces.
And the extra course.
Right? And an hour plus extra course. One. Mr. Chairman.
Larry's smiling. How come? I'm just curious.
I'm just listening.
He's listening.
No, I don't mean to. Is there something wrong with that?
No. I've heard the same exact comment. I've gotten the same comment.
All right.
It's a lot of time.
It's adding time. The second point is that we could petition to have the MTA, or if there's a change, because what you did indicate was that when we got the Metro cards, the pricing went down. Because of the Metro card, right?
Yes.
So it wasn't that the price of the bus, the trip changed for the people, but because we went to the Metro cards, there was a discount that was given. No.
That was the fare that they charged on all express buses.
It's the same thing. Is that because when we
It's not that MetroCard changed any of their fares.
But we reduced our fare because we got into the MetroCard system.
Correct.
Right. So
our fare was reduced.
Right.
Our fare was reduced. So why wouldn't we petition the MTA to have our bus line?
Because it didn't work like that. And see, that's what I was trying to drum home.
I don't understand that either, so maybe you can explain.
It had nothing to do with us petitioning them to reduce our fare.
I understand the point you're making that said that when we joined the MetroCard system, the price for express buses was $5.50, right? For example. And our fare before we joined was $7. So by joining the MetroCard system, we sign on to the price of $5.50 or whatever the number is, right? So that reduction is there. Why don't we, the county, through the Department of Transportation, petition and say, well, no, let's have for our bus line $7, right? Period, right? Because what happens is I've heard so many people say to us
they were willing
to pay more for the convenience, right? Because that's what it came down to being. It's convenient. It's not that you can't do that. And then we have some additional details and the statistics that we have. I would like to get to the place where we get to the detail on the route, and specifically coming from the bus company, because I've heard two different things on this that said that if we eliminate the weekend service and we go to just peak hours only, that your proposal on alternatives would work on the weekends when there's less people traveling and the time isn't as great, and that people could drive down to the 4 for those Yankee fans that want to get on the 4 and do that kind of thing instead of taking express bus or whatever, right? They could do that on the weekend. So eliminating weekends for the
they could become Met fans,
right? Oh, that's true, and then they have to go, they have to really put together. Then they really would want to be a champion. But we won't go there right now, right? Right? It's too early in the season. Both New York teams have a chance at this point, right? The 4C, but eliminating that service according to the information that I received, which saved half the money, right? So just going to the peak.
We have
out.
Statistics. We have any information?
Yeah. I don't know who provided that information at the system, but I can tell you right now. If you eliminated weekends and you eliminated off-peak, you saved less than $500,000 on an annualized basis. The exact figure is something like $489,000.
But it's still a savings.
Right, exactly.
Because you have to take in mind that on Saturdays, the service is already reduced by 50% of what it is on a weekday. And on Sunday, it's reduced another 50%.
Mr. Chairman, can I...
Let me finish. So if we could, what we could get is if we get for all the routes to get the expense, the fare box, and the aid.
There's something else to your proposal. There are other ways to tweak this as well.
Finish.
No, just on the same point. I just want to add to it. Because you can deadhead the buses coming back, too, and not stop on the way back. That would add some more savings. In other words, right now they come back and try to pick up riders and pick up almost nobody coming back.
Yeah, no, why not?
No, they don't pick up anybody.
They don't pick up anybody. They deadhead.
No, they stop coming back.
That's the word.
Did you not hear what I said? They deadhead coming back.
They deadhead coming back.
Okay, good.
We need to do when they go back at night.
I take it all the time. It's a wonderful, I love it. But they deadhead from what is it, like 90th Street on up?
Yeah. I mean, they pick up in Manhattan coming back.
Yes.
In the afternoon. But in the morning, they go down full, and they come back with no passengers.
Okay.
And in the afternoon, they go down empty and pick up passengers.
That's not what this says.
Mr. Chairman, again, we should get that additional detail, because by having that additional detail, whether it's $489,000 or $750,000, is a savings that could be occurred that will be achieved. And the question is, for these particular passengers who still live in Westchester County, who still deserve the services at a level that we are providing for them, this is something that's important. So what we also would need, though, is
plus, if you add in the additional cost, if somehow we can go back to $7, and I don't know if that can be done or not. I
can't be done.
Mr. Chairman, I mean,
if you can write to the MTA, they're not going to do it.
In all due respect to
it's a very interesting mechanism, you know. You have expensive operating costs.
Right.
Right? You have operating costs you have to contend with. You have, in many cases, a passenger ridership base that's willing to pay the extra money, and we're trapped in a state-authorized system that doesn't permit you to
do it.
Close the gap.
I'll
tell you why.
Pretty typical.
I'll tell you why it doesn't. Because right now, the people in Westchester who want to take the bus to Jerome and Bainbridge and catch the BXM4B, which is express bus, that except for the run in the Bronx, once it hits the Major Deacon, it parallels our exact service. It's the same exact service. Uses the same streets, goes down Fifth Avenue, comes back up Amsterdam. A passenger in Westchester could get on the 20 or the 21, take it down to Jerome and Bainbridge, get on that express bus at the same cost that they're now paying for the express bus in Westchester, because all of the fares are the same.
Mr. Chairman, and in all due respect to the Commissioner, one of the things that we get to do at this table and in our budget table is make those decisions, understanding that we are the highest property tax county because of a lot of reasons, not just because of us.
Don't say that, please, because I just get so sick. Property tax county, it's all taxes.
Right, that's right. That's what I'm saying. It's all the taxes combined, right, that we make decisions to provide levels of service that are at specific levels because, you know, saving the $1 million on this particular run, it's not going to make, one, this year, an appreciable impact at all into the person's savings. And saying that we need to make sure that we're taking care of the needs of those constituents. So that is something that's a concern. And to me, it is just unconscionable that the answer from the administration side through the commissioner is, oh, you know what? It's not going to happen, so we're not going to do it. We're not even going to try, right?
Although we've asked them about modified fares on many different occasions. And I also like to share something with you in terms of the survey that we did of passengers on the BMX4C, which was done in late 2007 and issued in 2008, where it talks about what's the purpose of your trip, race and ethnicity. But what was most interesting is, if this Beeline route was not available, how would you make this trip? Okay, and
hot air balloon.
Pardon me? Drive only 14% said they would drive. 5.6% said they would carpool. 22% said they would make a taxi to the railroad. But it was very interesting that 32% said they would take Metro North, and 20% said they would take the New York City subways, and 2.5% said they'd take New York City buses. So people do have alternatives. Are they as convenient as we presently exist? No, in some cases not. I think the sheet that was just passed out here showed just a quick analysis of those people and what routes presently don't have any connection to the railroad. If you look at all these folks north of Hartsdale Avenue can get to the White Plains or Hartsdale train station in less than 12 minutes.
It just seems to me there's 1,600 people that are being affected, and we're all trying to go in.
800 people.
Each way, 800 people. I think that's a significant amount on a daily basis. And I know people are complaining about it for whatever reasons, but a lot of people are also saying, look, this is a convenience. This is why I chose to live in Yonkers. This is why I chose to live in Greenberg. This is why I chose to stay here. I'm going to, choose a different place to live now. And, I know that the county tried to do this 7 or 8 years ago. And it was after it was offered, everybody started complaining in the county, I think in their wisdom, rethought the process. I wasn't part of the board there,
well,
so I don't know who's got that institutional knowledge.
The state did come up with additional STOLA aid at that point in time, and we were in a much better place than we are now. Like I said, even with the STOLA aid where it is and the reductions that are being talked about already, we're in a big hole, and we're in a much different place than we were 6 years ago. Much different.
Mr.
Chairman, one point is, I would hope that we would be able to sit down with Liberty Lines and see if we can find some way to save some of this service. I'm looking here. There is a Manhattan to Westchester list of stops on the way back in the morning. It gets down there. The first one gets down there at 9:10. It turns around and picks up people at 9:35, 9:39, 9:48, et cetera, et cetera. One way that you can save is if nobody's coming back on those, you can deadhead the bus. There are other ways
Tom, does not matter. As long as that driver is out on the road, you're paying it.
Well, I understand.
You're paying them anyway.
I understand the theory, but operationally, I also understand there are ways to save some money here. We could probably save half. So I disagree with your number. I think we could probably save half. If we were to limit this to weekdays, commuter times only, there might even be a way.
What do you base that on?
Information that I have from another analysis, and I think
we'd be glad to share that one with you.
Okay. And then also, if we also maybe can change some of the times, working with Liberty Lines, we might be able to rearrange. Maybe we won't have to have the same frequency. There might be a way to accommodate people by working with them and their drivers. And
we already did eliminate one.
Well, I'd like to see us do more of that. Well, secondly, there's a legal issue that I think we have to confront, and that is there is a very complicated system of allocating out. I shouldn't say complicated. It's a simple system, but it's a complicated legal issue as to who owns the route.
That's not an issue.
And whether we can eliminate the route that is owned by Liberty Lines.
There's no such thing as Liberty Lines or anyone else owning a route. There's no such thing as franchise route.
I've had discussions with their attorney who has a different view.
So
we might be buying a lawsuit here if we're not careful. This is just something that I think that this Board of Legislators has to consider before we just say...
This committee is going to compile... number of issues. The purpose today was to get the commissioner in to go through the different parts of the savings plan that the county executive has proposed for the Department of Transportation, knowing that the main piece seems to be, the largest piece seems to be this elimination of service into New York City. I'm pretty much committed to a 12:15 cutoff. We have the Parks Commissioner here. We have another area to start to get into. So, Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you. And just for the data that we're asking for, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure Liberty Lines is provided and worked with the Commissioner of Department of Transportation to provide that data. Can we get the data directly from the Department of Transportation so that we have the data that Liberty Lines on this particular route specifically? But also, again, for the request is to have the expense, the fare box, the federal and state aid, and number of passengers as a spreadsheet by the routes for every route, right? So that we have.
First of all, there's no federal assistance.
Okay.
And then the state assistance is not based by route.
Yeah, but you could still provide us with some of the information.
We can provide you, obviously, with what we receive from the state.
And we had federal aid.
State aid if we cut out some routes?
That's correct.
I thought you said it's passengers per mile.
I said that's how we make our judgment. I did not.
The state doesn't give out aid on the basis of miles?
No. The state, there is no state formula for stow.
And Mr.
One of the problems with the distribution of stow over many years, maybe beyond a decade,
what the formula is.
It's basically a very arbitrary.
At one time it was miles traveled and all those sort of things, but that was discontinued probably 10 years ago.
I'll never hear it.
And Mr. Chairman, just the federal aid, didn't we get federal aid for buses? For purchase of buses.
Absolutely. Yes.
So that would be included in the number.
No, this is operating. You're talking about operating. Let me just correct that. There are some routes where we receive federal money under Cross Access Reverse Commute Program. There was some money that the paratransit receives under New Freedoms, and we can certainly list.
Okay, so then if we can. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
But if someone can pull together all of your questions and...
Yeah, well, we've got the minutes are being taken. We'll send it to you. I just would like to, just in conclusion, I know you want to go to the... I'm going to ask the county executive, and I see Katie here, to maybe if you or somebody from your department to come to this meeting, at least so that they see somebody there from, you know, whether it's the commissioner or somebody from our department at this meeting so that they know they're being heard. Because I don't have the information to report.
That's the purpose of our hearing.
What's the harm in going to another hearing to hear what people
like
were going to gather?
After what we heard and what we went through at the last time we did that, it's just counterproductive. I mean, the minute I opened my mouth, people just started shouting.
We got absolutely nothing out of it.
You know, I hate to go to meetings where people are shouting too, but that's my job. I do it.
Will you be there to referee?
I will be there, but I don't have the answers.
Who likely is to be running the meeting that day? The public hearing.
The public hearing? I'm the hearing officer, and the transportation board members will be there. And, we'll have all of our fact sheets available, so I think we'll answer a lot of the questions.
All right. Commissioner, thank you very much for your time.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you, Larry. Good day.
Next item on the agenda is a similar review of the expense reduction plan that the county executive has proposed for the Department of Parks, Recreation, and Conservation. We have with us Commissioner Joe Stout.
He's running away. He's running away from me.
How do the buses affect playlists?
All right.
Well, I was going to stand up and say something. Most of the people on the weekends on that bus are employees, not...
Right. That's what we thought. That's what I thought. They've got to get there.
Right. And they have other options to get there. So it's really not a revenue thing.
Joe, why don't we start the same way? If you could just give us, introduce us to the picture, as you see it, of the administration's recommendation for a savings reduction, well, a savings plan. For
sure. Well, you know, obviously, as you know from the rest of the departments, the county executive asked us to look at our budget and see if there were ways to reduce the expenditures in 2010 without having a significant impact on the services we provide. We gave him a plan that included some reduction in personnel costs and some revenues that we felt were pretty conservative, and some adjustments to some of our schedules that would not have an impact on revenue production, but would allow us to shave some costs off. So that's what we did, and we basically came back with $1.6 million worth of savings for this year. The big bulk of it is in annual regular savings, depending on what positions they are. Now, you know, I can't sit here, and I told him, I can't sit here and say that there won't be an effect if we don't replace every single laborer, and we do some of that at seasonal peak times with hourly staff. We won't. You'll see some. It'll take a little bit longer to get some things done than we've been typically used to. But I don't believe that that's a significant enough reason to not try and save some of those positions. The other part of that is by saving some of that time and doing some of the different schedules, we're able to deploy in a different way than we have in the past. I've asked the county executive, and he's agreed. It depends on the position as well. If we lose an electrician, that's hard to replace on an hourly basis. We need an electrician or a plumber or a mason or a recreation supervisor, depending on the type of programs that we want to run. So we've been looking at specific types of jobs to be able to do business a little bit of a different way.
Headcount is meeting the implication over here is 13 people would be laid off?
Nobody's laid off.
Okay, what's that mean, the headcount implication?
It's through attrition. Okay. On average, the last 5 years, the Parks Department has had over 25 vacancies through turnover. We happen to be a fairly old department, believe it or not.
Veteran.
Thank you. Better word, Mr.
So the 13 would represent how much, in your opinion?
Give or take $100,000 a position. We have asked the county executive, he's agreed that depending on the position that it is, we would get about $20,000 back in hourly money to use for seasonal peaks for labor types, cutting grass, picking up the garbage, cleaning bathrooms, you know, those kinds of things. Unfortunately, Parks is a boots on the ground kind of a business where we can use technology. Obviously, we do, but those kinds of services we still need to be able to. We still have 18,000 acres. We still have 50 parks. We still have to provide that. We're just going to provide it a little bit different way. So that's what the head. But there's no job losses, and I'm happy to report. Even as of we got another retirement in my email this morning, we're at 15 vacancies right now. So.
So the this once again, this is savings that would begin roughly.
It began
when
it began once the vacancies were held. We've done one, and there'll be another one that I will ask him to do. We lost a foreman at one of our parks, and that one I would like to replace. Okay. But then the ensuing vacancy is one that we would look to hold. But I believe we'll exceed our vacancy number.
Okay, so personnel, the hirings are, and the impact on 1010 are already underway. The remainder of the savings program, are there any elements of that that are larger than others, and is there any clock that we should be looking at for when?
Well, you'll
things
see,
might kick in.
Yeah, you'll see when we go into our pool season schedule.
Okay.
We did it last year as an experiment. We typically open the pools at 10 o'clock. Last year we opened them at 11 o'clock. The pools and beaches that had absolutely no effect on attendance, and we saved almost $200,000 in hourly money by doing that. So that's another one that we did again, recommended to do, and the county executive accepted.
So that's just a continuation of the 11 a.m. opening.
Yeah. And then we're going to do a 1 week later opening for our pools. typically we open the second weekend in June. Last year, you know, we had great weather like today all summer long. You know, this June it'll be hot, 90 degrees on the weekend that we're not open. But historically, until the kids are out of school, those weekends are extraordinarily low in attendance. And we do not actually make any money at all for those weekends. So we're going to open a week later, and then typically the last
week. So what are you saying, the last week in June?
Yes.
And Mr. Chairman, just in general, because of all of the snow days that we've had this year, the schools are actually not closing until the last week
of June.
Right. So it just worked out.
How much do you save for that extra week?
The hour generates about almost $200,000. The extra week is probably $60,000 or $70,000. It's a lot of money. We have five places open, lifeguards and you know, the green shirt staff and everything else that goes along with it. It's not an insignificant amount of money. The other part of it is typically the attendance in the second week, the latter part of August, dramatically drops at our pools. So we're going to open an additional hour later, starting at noon, the last 2 weeks of August.
After camp season.
After all that stuff is done, people go on vacation. So that's another $25,000.
Mr. Chairman, just on the vacancy factor. When we adopted the budget, we adopted a vacancy factor. Do you recall?
Ours was about, I believe it was $315,000.
Number of people, because that's what you have.
I do not. That would be approximately three.
Okay.
And on an annualized basis.
So we
increased with this one.
Right. So I mean, so you increased about 10 people versus what we had initially accounted for in the budget.
13.
So, but we had three already in.
Right.
In,
but I had 13 on top of that.
13 on top of that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Rogowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Commissioner. Just first, will be 1 hour later on the pool at $200,000. So you saved that last year. Did we put it back in the budget? I mean, is that...
We did not anticipate doing the 1 hour when we put our budget together.
Okay, so you put the 200 back in, so now the 200 is coming right back out. So it is new savings this
correct
year. Okay. Keeping track of all your headcounts now, didn't we replace Billy Casper somewhere in the summer?
Yeah, we did that at Maple Moor, but without adding anybody.
Right, so I mean, as you keep losing people, you know, how are you're continuing to cover all your services as these people retire, and I assume not replacing.
Yeah, and as I said before, it depends on what the position is. And the county executive has been open to the discussion of moving people around from where they go. Because it's a random, you decide to retire, retire, but actually you need a job there and not over. Not
so big picture, you say big picture, you're able to replace either most of the full-time would be seasonals. Is that the big
picture? For peak, yes, for having people around for during the peak use periods of those particular facilities. You know, as I said, I can't tell you that you're not going to see this time of the year, you might see us go a little bit longer picking up garbage at a park or getting to something than we typically would have liked to, but it's not, I don't believe it's significant enough of a downgrade of the service to warrant continuing to pay for the full-time staff.
Are we, you know, I've heard over the years, you know, one or two of these examples where seasonals are really, in fact, like 11 months, and they work for years for the county as sort of seasonals. So are we still in that kind of mode?
Those are hourlies. We do have
those,
some. But they go from different pay locations, so they're kind of year-round seasonals, for lack of a better word. But for the most part, they work 9 or 10 months, and then they get...
Yeah, I mean, it kind of cuts across us, but the difficulty is they go work, end up working 9, 10 months, and don't have all the benefits, don't have the pensions in.
That's been traditional.
Two-pronged question here, if I could jump in.
Yeah.
How much, if you remember, how much did it cost the county, more or less, to run Tibbetts last year?
A rough guess. It actually cost us nothing. You mean the pool itself?
Pool. Yeah, I'm talking the pool. The park is going to be... I thought last year it was open. This year it's going to be closed.
It was closed in 2009. It's opening this year.
Geez, time flies.
Yes. So
when you're having fun.
I was at the call.
All of our.
So what's the difference then? What's the impact going to be now that the pool's going to be open?
We hope to anticipate.
Yeah, a lot of people.
How's the look, by the way?
It looks great.
I'm going to go down there.
It'd be really great, we'll be ready
day.
For opening day. Yeah.
But just so you know,
the pools, all in, all five, not including Slayland, the other pools actually make money on operations. We'll never cover its capital costs because it's just so much money. But they money in, money out. For operations, they come more than
for the times that they're open.
Morning on this point.
Well, just because I thought I yielded to Gordon.
It was 2 years ago. Judy,
you yielded to Gordon. I've yielded to
Gordon. Let me just come back to the. There was a report in the paper that Playland may be opening an hour later. Is that part of this?
Yes. How does how much does that say?
Well, it's like, if I recall, it's 90,000 or whatever, but. Two questions. One, and I raised this, I guess, earlier budget meeting. We supposedly have Playland as revenue neutral in the budget, right? No tax levy in there.
Well, no, it's actually still budgeted at a profit.
Oh, still.
Yeah, you guys added money.
We added.
Yes, you did.
Because we believed you.
I gave you zero. You took more. You took more away. So it's actually budgeted to make a surplus. In the budget,
took some expense away.
$5 million against it.
My point is, I don't necessarily see Playland as a money maker. If we just break even, if I so did
create. When do we break even?
Well, the money side, I have several constituents actually approach me saying, you know, Playland is, hopefully the weather's good, very busy, a lot of people from out of county, but that sort of first hour in the morning. Is when some of our local people, certainly little kids, these are the people, and they, that's what's
going on. The amusement park business is a night business. That $90,000 represents a 3.5 hour a week savings because we added time on Friday night and Saturday night. So stay open later.
So we are going to stay open later.
Yeah. We did not take the full 7 hour day, or, you know. Six hours for every day.
The last bus goes after the employees leave.
Well, I mean,
there are very few people other than camps or school groups, and they'll come. We have specific camp days when they come, which will open earlier. But that extra hour, I believe, will have absolutely no effect on our attendance.
And to that point, if I may, but you do want to stay open later on.
Yeah, we added an hour and a half to the nighttime. On Friday night and Sunday night.
So they will close at what time now?
11:30. One is midnight and one is 11. Yeah, I believe it's midnight.
So I think that's helpful because I'm sending the kids out to the community.
At 11. They're not going home. Right, 11 on Sunday.
And Mr. Chairman, finally, just to get a real big picture here, you've been around for a while as commissioner. I mean, it seems to me that every year you're asked by whoever the county executive is, to start producing some savings. So I'm just curious if you can kind of reflect on this. Is this any different this year? I mean, you know, we put a vacancy factor in the budget, but because of our fund balance and the way we do our budgeting and filling money, my understanding is every year the old county executive would go to all the commissioners and say, starting January 1st, got to start finding some savings because we have to find that. So, with a lot of hype of what's going on this year, with much more public, the $16 million in this big savings the county executive is asking all the commissioners to come up with. But is this really any different than you've done any other year?
The level of it. Well, interestingly enough, in 2009, there was not a request for a savings plan. But because of the weather, we started to cut to try and cover what our revenue shortfalls were going to be.
But you're delaying of hirings, and it was something you did have to do every year.
Yeah, but the scale is
a little more this year.
Is much more higher, and obviously we're a revenue-driven department. I mean, our tax levy is now down. We're committed to making this number, so the tax levy will be down 28% in 3 years. We'll be well over 70, almost 75% revenue supported on direct operations. That's
significant.
Yeah, that's the exact opposite of most municipal recreation and parks departments, and we're affected both by the economy and by the weather.
So, Joe, could you just recap us for us once again? So Monday through Friday, Saturday and Sunday, there'll be an opening time at the park of what hour?
Playland?
Yeah.
12 or 1?
It depends. It depends on the time of the year. During the school season in June, we'll open at 11. Maybe there's one day that's 10, so that the school groups can get there on the bus and then have enough time to make it worthwhile. So I think there's 4 days that are like that. And then once we hit July and August with camps, Tuesday and Wednesday are the camp days. So we'll open at 11 rather than noon. And then some of the other days will open at 1 o'clock. Which was a historic day. The time to open was 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
That's probably 15 years ago now that we went to the 12 o'clock time. And there really isn't a significant amount of business, other than groups.
Okay, you lose the whole lunch. You're losing the whole lunch by going away. Is the concessionaires concerned?
Yeah, they're fine with
lunch.
Yeah, because the bulk of the people that are in the camps don't buy lunch.
They bring their own.
They don't do that. The people that spend the money come mid afternoon and later. That's the amusement park business.
The Friday night hour for closing in say July, August is that
12
uniform,
midnight,
and that's midnight.
Yeah.
And Saturday and Sunday.
Sunday will be 11 instead of 10:30.
Okay, so Friday and Saturday is midnight.
Yes.
Did you let Rye City know?
Not yet. I don't think so.
What about the
neighbors?
The fireworks and everything. It's always on Friday nights.
It's Wednesdays and Fridays.
Wednesday and Friday night.
What about the cost
effect of that? Have you ever looked at whether
the attendance on those nights is significantly higher than the other nights.
So it's worth the cost.
Yeah, oh, sure.
I have a big revenue producer for you, though, on that. You need to take a little rowboat out into the Sound and charge each of the boats
that line up. Yeah, you're right. I don't know off the top of my head what it is. I want to say it's $30,000.
Judy's point, I've had several people say to me,
we got a contract with a fire.
It's hard to, for the $3 that they have to go in now, for the fireworks,
they don't have to pay the outside. You can see.
But they used to like to go inside.
Now
they won't buy the, they'll stay outside.
In a bad year, the $3 and $5 represented $800,000 last year.
That's what came in.
Right.
Wow. Yes.
Right. So the net was about 7.25. I mean, I clearly don't recommend not doing the pay one person.
Thank you. Joe, the only other thing was a question with the hours opening later. Was there things that happened during that hour? Because that was a question
that
came up. Was there training that was done in that first? Because it was pretty slow in the first hour. Is that
all of the stuff is prior to once we're open. They're open. They have to be on the end and they rise and doing their thing. So no, all of the pre checklists and all of that, that's done before we let the public in. Okay.
So the employees have to get in at the same time as always.
No, they'll come in an hour later. That's the
but
savings. That's the savings.
But they're coming in still an hour before the people get there.
Sure.
Right, they get there now.
Sure.
And they do their pre-checks. They go through.
Got it.
Because that's what we, lifeguarding and everything, you had to go.
Right.
Okay, and the second question is on Croton Park Pool.
Yes, I'm sorry. That's one of the ones that we recommended not opening. That's the pool in the campsites. There is another opportunity for campers to swim at the beach. We have historically had a problem. That pool is not open to the public. There's no revenue attached to it, and that's been a problem for trying to find lifeguards for historically. So the beach is open. People can go to the beach.
At Croton Point?
Croton Point.
So the $20,000 of savings, because that's the savings?
That's chemicals, water, and staffing by not opening that pool.
And how many people use the pool? I mean, it wasn't a public pool. It was just for, like, the camps?
People who rented RVs or cabins or tent sites. The majority of those people actually went to the beach anyway.
Right. Okay. Right. So it's not a public pool.
Correct. You can't, as a resident, walk up and pay.
You can't use a park pass.
No.
Okay.
No, you have to be a registered camper to use the beach. You can do that.
Right.
But the pool, you have to be a registered camper in order to use that.
Why was there a consideration of doing the opposite thing of opening the pool?
It's very small. It's not. Yeah. to open to the public is not enough parking out the way it's out on the point. There's no way to get to it. You have to go through the reserved camping areas where we only let people with gate cards go into. It's logistically it doesn't work.
So you're gonna fill it in?
Excessive.
Okay, thank you.
It's really small. You know, it's not. I want to say it's 25. It may not even be 25 yards long. It's a small, and then there's a small tide pool next to it. It's really small.
It's basically an amenity for the camper.
Correct.
Right,
yes.
The campsite. Correct. So I mean, in the camp, what, the campers are local camp people. Or are they, you know,
There's a combination of them, but.
I mean, the reason I'm asking the question is, I'm just recalling doing the camp thing when being a young tyke. And one is that the pool was available. There was a pool available, and there was no lifeguard. You were swimming at your own risk and all that other kind of stuff.
In my tenure, we've always had a lifeguard.
No, I'm not talking about
his history.
Oh, in other places.
I'm just talking about...
He's old, Mr. Commission.
Wow.
Way back.
But not as old as you. We're going to go there. But I'm just saying that if it's part of the campsite amenities... Right. That do you think that would have an impact on the campsite?
People coming to the campsite revenue.
Right. Yeah. That's and
I don't think so, because most of the history has been most of the people don't go to the pool, they go to the beach anyway. Mm-hmm. There's some I can't tell you that they wouldn't, but we sell out the cabins with waiting lists, and same thing with the RV sites. Hence they're a little bit different, but I don't think so. I really don't.
And
we've asked the question,
right, Joe? I'm sorry.
We've asked the question about lifeguards or having our facilities unguarded. I don't believe that that's. I mean, that's the new county attorney, but prior county attorneys going back 15 years or more have said no.
No, it's just an interesting thing. Like, if you go to like a public campsite or right, whatever, right. KOA or something like that,
or a hotel,
right? Even a hotel or something like that. I'm not sure why or would be different, but that was just a question. And it's not a permanent closure.
Right.
I mean, you'll analyze it again next year and determine whether that makes sense. Thank you.
Mr. Rios,
I'm done.
You're done.
I was just going to say the answers to his thing. There have been numbers of people right from Westchester who get the campsite up there and go up there weekends, Ken, or go up there at night for a week.
It's probably a pretty good mix.
It's a good mix
between
a lot of people
non-residents and residents.
Visit.
The RVs are primarily non-resident people, mm-hmm. but the cabins and the tents are a lot of residents.
If you have a pool available, people may or may not use it. If it's not there, they're like, I'm not coming. Right?
We'll find out. I don't think so, but we'll find out.
And we have the other items to
report. All right, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much.
Joe, we'll get together.
Thank you for your time.
Yes, sir.
When are we going to meet?
Regina's trying to put a special meeting on that.
Let me know ahead of time.
We'll do.
All right.
Want to move the 3 sets of minutes first, Bill? I'll be happy to do that.
We have some minutes and then some quick items. You'll see, you should read the items, you'll understand why. But if we go to the approval of our minutes for our meetings of February 22nd, March 1st, and 4th,
I would move all three
minutes.
Second.
Sent to you. We have a motion to approve these minutes and a second. Any discussion?
Well,
all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Minutes are approved and submitted then. We have as you can see, for referral to the county executive, similar to a few items we handled a few weeks ago. These are sewer modifications, each one from Legislator Nona and two from Legislator Testa. Mm-hmm. And we would be voting to refer these to the county executive to begin the process. Motion by Mr. Pinto and a second by Mrs. Williams. All in favor?
Aye.
And those items are moved on to the county executive. Is there any other business to come before this committee at this time? Mr. Dodd, and motion to adjourn by Mr. Rogowski, second by Mr. Pinto. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Good meeting.
Good meeting.
What time is it?
1:30.
Okay.
Is it still raining out?
I'm sure.
you almost need a whole meeting, a whole 2 hours for the bus. Mm-hmm. That could have, I could have let that go for a while longer. And quite possibly, I think we started ahead into some areas that we weren't going to resolve, certainly this meeting.
Yes, definitely.